Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google+, and also on Periscope at TotalTutor. And it's, again, the Just Two Choices celebrity segment. So I still want to welcome the program my co-host, Rico Rakoski. Rico, how are you, man? And I know you're excited about our guest today.
I'm super excited, Neil. Thank you. And I hope high vibes to you. And it's truly an honor and a privilege to have with us today the author of the number one personal finance book of all time, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, which, by the way, worldwide has sold over 30 million copies, published in 53 languages, and is in over 100 countries. Today's guest, author, electrifying entrepreneur, educator, Robert Kiyosaki. Robert, welcome. Semper Fi. And thank you for your services and Marine Corps Aviator.
Well, thank you.
All right, Robert, we're so excited to have you on the show, and especially at this time, we're looking at our economy and everything like that, Rico. So, Rico, what question do you want to touch upon first with Robert?
Well, actually, first of all, I actually want to start on something in education, Robert, for the sake of discussion here as we get started, a quick background. Both Neil and I have background as entrepreneurs and in education, I'd say supplementing traditional education. Neil's the CEO and founder of his own business, Total Tutor, and the Total Education Network. Graduated from Duquesne, and his dad was a Naval Academy grad. And as for myself, I'm very active in STEM education. And for those who aren't familiar with that, science, technology, engineering, and math education in Detroit, associated with a foundation in the auto industry. And I write books and publish books for kids on positive choice. I flew at 16 and then transitioned to the airlines, and I'm a graduate of the Air Force Academy. So that's kind of our background here as we move into education. Robert, in your books you talk extensively about the importance of education, very specifically about the enormous importance of financial education. And you've had excellent success with your books and seminars and your games and in this topic of financial education. So in the future, how do you see this important life skill, financial education, getting out there for the population or implemented? Is it going to stay grassroots, or do you have other ideas for how to supplement those ideas?
Well, that's a big question. And first of all, congratulations for flying F-16s. I wasn't that good a pilot, so I was a gunship pilot. I was a little gunship pilot in Vietnam, so we were low and slow. But anyway,
I'd like to trade a place with you. I think that's a lot of fun also.
It was. The problem with education is education. Mm-hmm. And what most people don't realize is that going to school actually keeps you poor. Mm. And so by, saying, well, how do we solve this problem of the economy and yada, yada, yada? Well, the problem begins when you advise your child to go to school, get a job, work hard, save money, get out of debt, and then invest in the long term in the stock market. That's where it begins. And as long as you think that dogma or that mantra is smart, then you'll never become rich. So it's only until you break out of that dogma,
wow,
you actually begin to see a new world. And that's where the problems begin. The problem is our school system. It's obsolete. It's out of date.
And Robert, because especially I talk education all the time. I mean, when there's not a mindset of specifically thinking out of the box, looking at developing leaders in school and teaching them more than just, hey, go ahead, work hard, keep getting educated and get a job. That's going to continue to put us in this financial debt, isn't it, Robert?
That's correct. It's that, and when they talk about the income gap, well, the gap begins in that gap between your ears, and what are we filling the kids' brains with? And that's where it begins, because, the story of Rich Dad, Poor Dad, my poor dad was a PhD, University of Hawaii, Stanford, Northwestern, and all that stuff, but he died a poor man. Good man, hardworking. Whereas my rich dad was an entrepreneur, never went to school, but he says, if you go to school, you'll work for me, because he was an entrepreneur and our schools train you to be employees. And that's where the divide begins. So as you know, the one reason people are poor is because Chapter 1, Lesson 1 in Rich Dad, Poor Dad says the rich don't work for money. So if you're an employee or self-employed like a doctor, you pay the highest taxes around.
Right.
I think that's funny.
Yeah.
Whereas myself as a professional investor, I pay zero tax and legally, legally. But so I get ahead 10 times faster because I can make, let's say, $1 million and pay zero tax.
Wow. And
Robert, if you talk about those kind of things, about 20 years ago when you first introduced this idea of financial education, the importance of financial education, Rich Dad Poor Dad, you were considered to be way out there.
Yeah.
Yet, what's happening today in our reality, as Neil have talked about here, is that, there's this importance of financial education is coming around. I mean, can you see a change at all from 20 years ago when you first introduced this and everybody said you were crazy to how the idea is being entertained today, or are they still saying it about the same as they did 20 years ago?
Okay. They tell you don't make mistakes. They punish you for making mistakes. Mm-hmm. I was reading this article about from the so-called academic who says you can't learn from making mistakes.
Oh, jeez.
And you know what I'm going? When I was a kid, I learned to walk because I fell down.
Mm-hmm.
And when I touched the stove, I understood what my mother said, don't touch the stove.
Right.
But school teachers really think you have to have the right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what happens, you become like my poor dad, great man, PhD. He had all the answers, but he was terrified of doing something because he might make a mistake. On the other hand, as a pilot, how many drills and practice runs did you do every day?
That's exactly it, the real
every
thing.
Every day I practiced.
Every day.
Yeah, every day. All I did was practice. When I played football, we practiced 5 days a week to play a one-hour game.
Right.
And so the way you get smarter is by making mistakes.
Mistakes, right.
And once you can understand that you're supposed to encourage a child to make mistakes and learn from your mistakes, then you have a smarter child. But the kid that does the best in the school is a kid with the best memory.
Yes.
And as you know, as a pilot, a lot of those guys who are great academic students were not great pilots. You know what I mean? Either you had it or you didn't have it.
And that's
the problem.
It's truly the problem, Robert. And I think when you said about not making mistakes with this teaching of the test system, Common Core, I have a specific situation where all that matters is one standardized test throughout the year. They're not teaching
one answer.
One answer. Exactly.
One answer.
And one answer. That you run into a situation that all that matters is those test scores. And they don't mean anything. And as you said in research before in one of your books, I remember, Robert, you said, C students are more successful down the line, or even B, and not just C, but ones that, education really wasn't for them. Once they were able to think out of the box, think for themselves, come up with things that, a lot of people get out of your comfort zone in specific ways. They're the most successful people, Robert, correct?
Well, I got that. I had to plagiarize that from a man named Albert Einstein. He said, imagination is more important than knowledge.
Yeah.
And as an entrepreneur, as you know,
right,
you got to have multiple right answers.
Yes, you do.
And one answer doesn't work, you got to do the next one immediately. And learn, and it's almost a process of elimination.
Right, because you have to try it first, Robert, and so many people are fearful to try it first and to make a mistake. So if they make it, that's how we're programmed in schools.
Well, that's the reason for that is you bring program from academia to corporate.
Mm-hmm.
And in corporate, you make a mistake, you're fired.
Right, exactly, yeah.
So that's why we have all these people who are, emotionally constipated, just hanging on to job security, or terrified of making mistakes. And then they try and become an entrepreneur, and they wonder why they fail. Well, because entrepreneurship is a system of failing faster and standing up again.
Right.
So that's why C students do better than A students. In fact, A students work for C students.
Yes, I love that title. And Robert, I've been working for over 20 years in my days off from flying, both when I was in the military and out of the military, flying out for the airlines and stuff, with STEM education. And it seems as if, you know, we're making some kind of headway as a supplement to the educational system because they're busy teaching testing. Do you think that there is possibility that there would be a need? I know you're trying to do it with your company, or a way of reaching more kids earlier with regard to this financial education as it's a supplement to the population, just like, you know, just like STEM education, or just like with Neil, you know, he tutors kids, which is outside the system. Do you think there's a place for that could make a dent in this challenge we have?
Well, 20 years ago, I designed the Rich Dad Company to bypass the schools.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm with you.
So that's why I created I started with the cash flow board game in 96, is that the board game teaches income, expenses, assets, and liability, basic financial statement stuff, not this FICO score crap.
Right, right.
You know, so it teaches you income, expense, asset, liabilities, but it encourages you to make mistakes by the game. It teaches you debt and all this. Mm-hmm. So basically what happens is the kids teach themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the cash flow game was designed for. And then from there, I wrote Rich Dad, Poor Dad to supplement the game.
Oh, wow.
I just bypassed it. And I don't really want to go and talk to the school teachers because that's like talking to my father.
So you hope that they come to you and read your books and stuff.
Third time. I get it.
the game will allow you to make as many mistakes until you win.
Mm-hmm.
And that, not that winning's that important, but it's sure better than losing.
Exactly, and we're limiting a lot of the competition, Robert, in our schools today. That's another big thing that since, you came out with the book about C students and A students, things have gotten worse in education, and now competition and kids that are very talented are not encouraged to become better and better at what they do. They're slowing down. So I guess what you're saying specifically enough is people need to get educated to a point, then they need to get on their own. And the only way to stay is through entrepreneurship, right? Robert, working for somebody else is just going to constantly keep you in debt and stuff, right?
No, it doesn't. It really has. You know, I could be an employee and still be rich. It's just, the second thing besides making mistakes is you have to look at your environment. You know, like school is the most oppressive environment for me.
Right.
Yet for the A student, it's heaven. So for one student, it's heaven, another student, it's hell. Like you look at flying, that environment, my spirit came out. I'm sure yours did too.
Mm-hmm.
I loved it. It was beyond love. Yet for other guys, it was horrible. I mean, I remember these guys, they couldn't sleep at night. They didn't want to take the next flight in the morning. You know, they were terrified. And then when we got to Vietnam, that's where the rubber met the road. And there were some guys who could not handle the environment of combat,
mm-hmm.
whereas other guys loved it. So that the issue of environment. So the other thing a person does is they find the environment that their spirit thrives in. You know, for some guys, like, you know, this guy Bob Costas, who does all the sports and all that.
Right.
That guy's got the dream job.
He
loves sports. He talks sports. He goes to sports. You know, that's his place. So the child should be encouraged to seek environment, not a job.
I love that. So it's more the passion, what they love to do, and become the very best at it, Robert, correct?
Well, it's the environment. You know, like I loved football,
mm-hmm.
and I love rugby. I did not like ping pong, you know?
Okay.
Not my game. Does that make sense? Because I love hitting people. But I went out for soccer, and I couldn't hit the guys. So I said, no, I think I'll stay with rugby.
So the environment. Interesting. It's the playing field of what you do on an everyday basis and how it fits for you and the environment.
You know, when you find your environment and your game, you've got it made, man.
And that's the interesting question. I think, Robert, I finally found my environment. I was a professional wrestler at one point in time, a school teacher, wrestling two different ways, for sure, wrestling kids in the classroom of 30 and stuck in walls or getting beat up in the ring, to my environment now where I thrive in it, where I would say it's unstructured but structured. And I'd say it's always moving. And that's where I can do any type of job that I do for my business individually or manage or coach. And it's a fit. So what advice would you offer parents for their kids regarding that, to say, hey, try to help them find their environment instead of
Well, first of all, when I meet young kids that come up to me and say they want to drop out of school, I say, well, you know, don't do that.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, but you don't like school. And I said, yeah, but in school you learn to type. And then when you look at life, I said school is good training to do, otherwise you become one. So if it makes sense, you know, for the parent to have the kids sit there in a cubicle and, you know, graduate to a cubicle, then that's what they want for their kid. If the kid loves it, they're in hog's heaven. But, you know, like, as you know, the happiest time of my life was flight school.
Mm.
You know, I studied in the morning and flew in the afternoon. You know, I thought I died and went to heaven. And then, you know, by the time I got to Vietnam, I was ready to fight. But there are guys who just never had it. You know what I'm talking about. They stayed behind to become instructors. But there were guys who wanted to fight. And so combat was my environment. I loved it. So other guys came back with PTSD, and I came back depressed going, hey, what happened? I didn't like flying after that.
What's next?
Because it was too controlled.
Wow.
You know, I couldn't call ATC and, you know, vector in there and do all this. I said, I'm out of here. So I became very cognizant of environment. When you look at guys like, let's say, Thomas Edison, his genius came out in a laboratory.
Right.
And, you know, and a guy like Mick Jagger, you know, he was an economist and an accountant, but his genius came out on stage. And that's what I'm talking about.
Wow.
You should make the child aware that there are different environments, and they got to find that for themselves. School is one environment. It's a hostile environment, in my opinion. It's a cruel environment. But you deal with idiots. And that's what it's good for.
So I guess, Rico, what Robert's trying to say for our listeners out there is they have to go to school, but don't go forever. What, Rico, you know what we're seeing a lot, and I'm sure Robert will touch upon this, the career student that constantly goes back to school instead of going. Yeah.
Right.
I know, you know, the National Merit Scholar, the National Merit Scholar winner in my school, you know, he's still there. He never graduated. You know, he's got more degrees after his name than anything else. And that's his environment.
He likes
his
environment.
And the teachers, the teachers loved him and all this stuff, you know. They hated me, loved him.
Because you speak the truth, Robert, for sure. Right, Rico?
Yeah. So it's when I talk to kids.
You know, the other thing I like that you brought up, too, Robert, when going through your books as well. And I really like your writing style. It's really clear. It's direct. You know,
thank you.
And what I also appreciate about your writing style is that when you talk about these subjects, with whether it's educators or it's about, you know, your dad or your rich dad, you talk about it always in a balanced way. There's no jabbing. There's no, you know, poking at anybody. You present both sides, I think, very fairly, so that as a reader, you want to keep going through the book and saying, okay, let me take a look at that as well. And so so that was just an aside that popped into my mind, because I really appreciate that way of writing. And the other thing that comes to mind goes back to aviation, but it also pertains to anything in life. I like how you emphasize in your books the importance of practice. Now, I hadn't thought of it until I looked at your books, and you go, yeah, in school you're testing. You're not really practicing for anything.
No.
I mean, I shouldn't say practicing for anything, but how you have to have this point at which you jump off to get real-life experience and make that part of your life to integrate it with the fundamentals that you learn in school. And it just comes down to the quality of your choice of practice.
Well, unfortunately, what the child learns is that making mistakes make you stupid.
Mm-hmm.
That's the takeaway.
That's true.
If you make mistakes, you're stupid. And I'm going, you got to be kidding me, because if you look at reality, the guys that make the most mistakes are the biggest winners. For example, you look at Michael Jordan. He got cut from his first team, but he never stopped practicing. You know, this guy Tiger Woods, he never stops practicing. You know, the great actors and actresses are always at rehearsal. You know, then they go on stage.
It's amazing to me. It's amazing to me that people don't make that connection. You know, an Olympic athlete is there because of the practice, but they don't make that connection to success in life. It's such an obvious, connection.
Yeah. And you know, you have to be, you know, I remember when I went off of football as a fat kid, the first thing they say was start running. I'm going, what? But you know what I mean? That's what you learn in real learning environments.
Yes.
The same as like flight school. I studied in the morning and flew in the afternoon. You know, I had we used to in the Navy, they're called downs, and you're downed. And so I just went back and practiced. And then they let me fly again. Yeah, it's how we learn.
Yeah, and I would agree with you with the whole making mistakes. At times I would get frustrated by it because, again, we group people based on their ability academically. And then the ones that don't make mistakes, don't study hard, are the ones that keep moving up the ladder in the school system. However, once they get to college, that changes in certain ways. And that the ones that thrive at least to get their degree and move on to their career and their environment, and not they learn to work hard once they got there. So looking at SAT scores, Robert, looking at ACT scores, and guaranteed that's going to mean that that student's going to graduate from college and move on to a good career. It's false completely. And that's the...
Let me take you... So, and as an investor, because I'm an entrepreneur, I can fix the company or I can fix the real estate. I'm hands-on, means I'm active, not passive. I have control of my investments. I control the taxes and the debt ratios. But the average person has no idea. Did you know that 30% of most funds and ETFs don't even turn a profit?
All right, Rico, we finish up the show, Robert, always with a very, very interesting question. And that question is basically a survey, Robert. And Rico, go ahead and give them the survey.
Yes, Robert. I have a couple of books out for kids. My latest book, actually the third edition of the book that's out, is called Just Two Choices. So in every moment, I mean, it's the only time you have is right here, right now. You have just two choices. You know, either flip the switch on or leave it off. You know what I mean? And so life, you either take a step that's incrementally closer to what you want to achieve, or you're going to take a step that's incrementally further away from what you want to achieve. So the thought here is, and I notice you use the word, as I read your books, you use the word choice and choose and chose a lot in your books. How much or what percentage, this is a question we ask everybody, what percentage of life that you feel is choice and what percentage of life do you feel is circumstances?
It depends upon the individual, whether they're active or proactive, whether they're inactive or proactive. For example, I'll often do something just to make a mistake. I will go into what I deem as the unknown. And because it's in the unknown is where you find life. You find answers. But most people will choose what they know, which means they're not active. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So you're the kind of person that just life is about choice, is what. But the percentage, what Rico's trying to talk about, how much of your life is making a choice? A lot of it. Most of the
all the time.
So, where's the best
place?
That's the difference. Yeah, definitely. Where's the best place we can find information on you, purchase your book, and learn more about you, all your different projects? I know new books are coming out for you, Robert. Tell us all that different stuff, and then specifically enough. Anything else you'd like to add before we say goodbye?
Well, there's richdad.com. But
you gave us a great perspective on education, something to definitely bring up with my wife in their discussion because, again, she was getting trained on another one of the methods because she teaches kindergarten, and the school's trying to go more business level and leadership level. And you are speaking more to the terms of specifically enough the environment. I think it's a great thing because we can't all be individualistic in the same in so many ways. So, Robert, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Keep up the good work, you guys.
Thank you, Robert.
Take care.
Thanks.
See you. Okay, right, bye-bye.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
All right, that was, again, live with Robert Kiyosaki. Take care, everyone, and we'll talk very soon, later today. Take care, everyone.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, TotalTutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley, and especially on Periscope at TotalTutor. I need to start periscoping before my celebrity interviews to ask my fans what kind of questions they'd like to ask the stars. So I'm first excited to welcome the program. This is the Just Two Choices celebrity segment. So Rico Rakowski, how are you, man? And I know you're excited, and it's really high vibe, especially when we're talking to a bunch of military people today, right? For sure.
Well, absolutely.
You and our
absolutely.
Guests.
And
Yes, thanks, Neil. And it is my apologies for having a little bit of a cold here. And it is high vibe, and I'm just excited to talk to a fellow Air Force Academy grad as well. He's done extremely well. So it's an honor and a privilege to have as our guest today a three-time Super Bowl champion for the Dallas Cowboys, which is rare considering a military commitment after the Academy, college All-American, Outland Trophy winner, scholar athlete, former Air Force A-10 fighter pilot and Gulf War veteran, Dallas Cowboys defensive tackle number 95, Chad Hennings. Welcome, Chad.
Hey, guys. Great to be on with you this afternoon.
Well, thanks, thanks for being here. And, you know, for today's discussion,
yeah, Rico,
with Chad,
I wanted to say one quick thing. Chad, again, we'll forget about, you know, Dallas Cowboy thing and the Steelers and how you beat us in the Super Bowl. We're still smarting from that, so I just had to bring that one up, especially for our flagship station.
You know, what I enjoyed about that game, I had two sacks in that game, so I thoroughly enjoyed that game, Neil. But not to rub it in.
Thanks for rubbing that in.
Yeah, I had to bring that one up. Okay, all right, Rico. I know you're excited about questions. Let's get started.
I'm sure you have more plays to tell us about later on there, Chad, with regard to
I've got a few.
Yeah, I'm sure. You know, I think this today is going to have so many fun directions that can go because among the three of us, we have quite a bit of an overlap in some ways. I'm not an academic All-American, nor do I have three Super Bowl rings. However, that being said, Chad's background, you know, defensive tackle for the Dallas Cowboys, 6'6", 290 pounds, state heavyweight champion wrestler, fighter pilot, Air Force Academy grad. He's helping others through his books. And then Neil's background, professional wrestler, 6'10", casts a huge shadow when he walks in the room. He turned educator, helping a lot of people. He went to Duquesne University, but his father also went to the Naval Academy and worked with Admiral Rickover in nuclear-powered submarines. So we got a little bit of this service academy thing going. And then there's me, 5'7", about 185 pounds. And I was made for working in coal mines. I was made for working in coal mines or flying fighters, so it fit real well to fly the fighters and an academy grad too. And, Chad, you know, at the academy, you excelled in both academics and athletics. And you were selected to go to pilot training to that elite Euro-NATO program in Wichita Falls, Texas. You know, it's only a couple hours north of Dallas where the Cowboys had drafted you in the 11th round. And so here you are with two enormous dreams, I'm sure perhaps even beyond what you ever expected, chance to fly fighters and at the same time just down the road, your NFL dreams waiting for you. How did that impact your going through pilot training, being that close and yet so far in so many ways? Because you have an 8-year commitment from the military before you can ever go to the pros. How did that impact your focus and the challenge of being in pilot training?
I think it was one of the most significant emotional events and one of the most difficult things I've ever had to experience. Because you're right, was an All-American, was a 2-time academic All-American Outland Trophy winner, was drafted by the Cowboys to play. But, you know, I did have the military commitment. But having gone, you know, going into the – watch the Cowboys play in Dallas, you know, on the weekends with my buds, you know, I wanted to be able to compete at that next level to see if I had, quote-unquote, the right stuff. And – but I knew that I had inside that I – from a character perspective – that I needed and I wanted to fulfill my commitment to the Air Force, to the Air Force Academy, to fulfill my commitment to my country. So it was an opportunity for me to have to grow up to you know, follow my word with the commitment that I had laid out to pursue that dream. But it was extremely difficult because I wanted to be able not to pursue the fame, the money, the accolades of being a professional football player, but I wanted to be able to compete. I wanted to see if I could compete at that next level.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, and Chad, again, you look at, did you consult with any other military grads that went on to play professional sports at that time when you were making those decisions? You think about specifically enough Napoleon McCallum for the Naval Academy. Then you go even to Roger Staubach, made that decision, to David Robinson and different people that had to wait the years till they finally could play after the commitment was up or close to up. Did you consult with any of those military grads to look at specifically enough if how to make this decision for sport to go on to professional sports after commitment?
No, I didn't. No, I didn't. Actually, you know, those guys you named are all Naval Academy graduates. I didn't have access to and David Robinson actually was going through.
Yeah.
He was still fulfilling his military commitment. He was, you know, playing for on the Olympic team. He was
right.
playing for the inter-service teams. You know, Roger would be the only one, and I didn't have access to him. But I did know that I didn't want to lawyer up. And I was actually approached by a couple teams to, hey, man, lawyer up and try and circumvent the system and get out. But it's, you know, that's wasn't the right thing to do. So it was an opportunity for me that I did lean on mentors, you know, from my parents, from my coaches, Coach Fisher DeBerry at the academy, to my mentors that were my sponsors when I was at the Air Force Academy, retired one-star general who flew several hundred combat missions in Korea and Vietnam. And I talked to them and leaned on their advice. And also, truthfully, I prayed a lot. And it was an opportunity for me to realize that who did I choose to be? Who did I want to be? Did I want to be known as a person of his word? Did I want to be known as somebody that tried to circumvent the system and pursue some personal goal or aspiration, even though it shouldn't have been an option?
I bleed the Naval Academy. My father got me so into the Navy. I always would go to the football games. And when David Robinson was at his peak with the Navy, Navy was my second favorite basketball team next to the University of Pittsburgh. And David Robinson was one of my favorite players. So I just was mentioning those because you might have to tell us some of the history of other military graduates, service academy grads who went on to play in professional sports. But I just mentioned a bunch of Naval Academy. I know that for sure. But, Rico, that's the interesting thing. Again, Navy always comes up for me, the midshipmen, for sure, Rico. I hope you hold that again.
Well, they are a bunch of characters, that's for sure. So, that reminds me of, too, Neil and Chad, is that, you know, Roger, colorblind, and he went in and served his time in the supply system, you know, and here you were, you know, pilot qualified, and congratulations on being selected for the Euro-NATO program. And at what point did you feel, Chad, that you kind of finally had that feeling of peace, you know, that blessing of peace where you finally said, okay, I'm in it for the commitment. I mean, because pilot training is so demanding, folks. I don't know if you understand. It's a year-long program, and it's very, very intense. And, you know, to have something even be a small distraction can be a challenge for most pilots, most people going through the program. So, you know, what point, how far into the program were you when you finally shifted in or into the gear of I'm here for the commitment and my heart's going to go that direction?
I struggled with those thoughts about the what if, you know, even through, Neil, through RTU, through my training with the A-10. And I never really
– Wow.
I had it settled when I was – at my first active duty assignment, flying A-10s in Europe, out of England in the western part of Germany, and then ultimately into Turkey, flying into northern Iraq in the first Gulf War.
Yeah,
that's where I had it settled. I was fully content with going to be a career officer in the Air Force. I mean, I was going to do my 20. I was enjoying it. I was just upgraded 2-ship flight lead. You know, I was leading guys into combat zones. I mean, it was balls to the wall. I mean, it was awesome. And then the opportunity came where our armed forces went through reduction in force in 92, where they needed to downsize after the first Gulf War. And that left me an opportunity, I guess a quandary, where the service, the Air Force, not only waived pilot training commitment, but they waived 2 years off of my service academy commitment, not just for me, but across the board for anybody, because they wanted individuals to get out. Now here I am, I'm stuck with this, the opposite end of it, that I made a commitment to the Air Force. I'm still in, you know, I want to do this. I have a great career going. Do I put it at risk and you know, attempt to go try to make the team with the Cowboys and do something that I hadn't played a sport in over 4 years to come back and try to do that? And that's where, you know, I leaned on those same people that I leaned on before, and I think I got great advice, and it worked out great.
You must have the God-given ability that God really gave you to play the sport, to be off for 4 years, and then to play at the highest level, Chad, and excel at the highest level. When you talk about the Super Bowl beating my Steelers, didn't remember you sacking sacking Neil O'Donnell twice. Don't even bring up that, but I didn't know that was you, Jack, because I tried to block it out of my mind. But to have that ability to sit out for 4 years, tell us how you trained, especially with the military commitment and the demand of being in the military and still being able to train and still have, you know, be in the shape you need to be in to try out for the team 4 years later.
What I did predominantly, as Neil can attest to, the Air Force encourages its pilots to be able to weight train, to be in great physical top shape, because we have to withstand the rigors of pulling G's in the cockpit, to withstanding long missions, because they're physically demanding and very physically draining. But I think it was divine providence that before I separated from the Air Force, I spent the previous 6 months deployed in Turkey, flying missions where there really wasn't much to do except fly, eat pizza, spend time at the Oak Club, and work out. So I was able to put on about 10 to 15 pounds of muscle. I was stronger than I had ever been to that point. And I was, training not with the anticipation of getting out, but that's just what I was doing. So I was already preparing myself to make that transition before that transition was even possible, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And
I was in the Guard at the time. If I can add to that, Chad, I was in the Guard at the time, and nobody had any idea that there was going to be a drawdown like the drawdown that was coming. So you amplify the fortuitousness of your training in advance, before you went there. It's amazing that you had that sense of training.
But I tell you what, guys, I don't care how good a shape I was in. There's a certain thing of what I'll call being in being in good cardiovascular shape, and then there's another thing called being in football shape. When I left, I was deployed in England and Western Europe, where in the summertime, if it would get above 75, 78 degrees, you had people that would fall over and die over there because they didn't have air conditioning, they didn't have a lot of the stuff there, and it just never got that hot. And then I'd go to training camp in Austin, Texas, where it's 95-plus degrees and high humidity. My first training camp, I thought I was going to die, literally, and then have to take on these, a lot of them future Hall of Famers and all pros, practicing against my own teammates on the offensive line. Man, it was a baptismal by fire, and I had to learn quick. And, it was just – I attribute that, a lot of the lessons that I learned growing up on a farm in Iowa to, being at the academy and, making that mental toughness, that transition through pilot training. And that's where, I honestly say that those 4 years off, I grew physically, I grew mentally, emotionally, as well as, spiritually, to be able to withstand the rigors of playing a professional sport. And I teased my teammates, too, back in the day that, hey, I used to have a real job before I came to play for the Cowboys. So,
oh, that's a great one, and Rico. That's a fantastic one. Because you think about it, what Chad had to do. I mean, and in a way, and then specifically to be off of the football field for 4 years, and then to perform at a high level for a dynasty is amazing, Rico, isn't it?
But and the other part of it too, that people don't, if you haven't been around the military, you haven't been around, flying training, for example. Just to give you a little bit of a background, I'd say, Chad, you're in two really high risk situations. Number one, playing sports is high risk. You could have lost your pilot training qualification, in some kind of an injury. And then the other side of it that not a lot of people are aware of is, there's only certain people at certain sizes, with certain sizes of bodies that fit in the cockpit. And your size, Chad, is 6'6", fitting into the cockpit, there's a risk there because these airplanes, folks have ejection seats. And
I'm so laughing as you're saying this, Neil. Well, that's hilarious. Yes. I'd received waivers for my height and weight. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had I was too big for the ejection seat, that if I ever had to punch out of an A-10 or any other cockpit, I would have probably have broke my neck because my head was above what they call the canopy breaker tool. When you pull the ejection handles, the sequence is that the canopy blows off first and then you go up the rail in your seat. But sometimes that sequence, mechanical malfunctions occur and life happens, that they have a canopy breaker tool that's supposed to be above your head that will penetrate the canopy, shatter it, first before you go up then. But my head was about an inch and a half above that canopy burner tool.
So your canopy,
so my head would have shattered the canopy. But then the length of my torso and my legs were up underneath the glare shield, and I would have probably broke both my legs getting out. But, you know, something funny, you were just reminding me, Rico, of when I would go through pilot training flying the old T-37, the initial jet trainer that the Air Force had.
Yeah.
One of my instructor pilots, who was the beauty about going to the Euro-NATO program, and we trained with all of our NATO allies. So I had instructors and fellow classmates that were from Denmark, were from Germany, from Belgium, from all over our different NATO allies. And I had an old German flight instructor who said, you know, Chad, you're too big to get out of this plane. What we're going to do if we're in a controlled ejection situation, we're going to roll the aircraft inverted upside down. Then we're going to pull the ejection handles, allow that extra G of the Earth's gravitational force to pull your big butt out of the plane. So I had a lot of different items on my checklist, my prior to ejection checklist, than my other fellow students.
Well, you know, Neil has a bunch of sports questions and, you know, coming up, and, you know, one of the things for me that's just really fascinating about what you did was, and also very ironic. So, you know, I fly for Southwest Airlines, and I'm not kidding you. Just last Friday, who comes out walking up to the airplane but a guy by the name of Chris Jessup, who wore your jersey number at the Air Force Academy. He's 6'8". And I just sat at the door. I said, do you know Chad Hennings? He says, oh, yeah. He says, I wore Chad's number. He says, all of Chad's accolades for all the things that he accomplished academically and in sports are above that locker. And I had to look at his locker every single day as I went to the academy. He says, it's a lot like being drafted by the Chicago Bulls and they hand you number 23 and say, you know, live up to the number. So it was just interesting. He says hi. Like, I saw him last week going through Chicago.
It is
so Neil
has
a whole
world.
Bunch of questions about sports. Neil has some questions here sports-wise.
That's an interesting story. Now I'm going to go to Chad and say, who else would you rank it? Like you went and were successful in the NFL that went on to professional sports with the Air Force Academy. I kept touting all my Naval Academy players I love, from Staubach to Robinson to McCallum. Who would you say from the Air Force Academy went on to have a career like you had in professional sports from the Air Force Academy?
Well, I was kind of not necessarily professional sports unless you talk about track, and Alonzo Babers was a 2-time gold medalist that we had at the Air Force Academy. Mm-hmm. But regarding professional sports, after the Air Force saw, I'll call it quote-unquote the success for me, that, you know, make the argument that when I'd play on a Sunday afternoon game that John Madden and Pat Summerall would be calling, and John Madden would, you know, circle me on the screen and say, Chad Hennings, United States Air Force Academy graduate, former A-10 pilot, you know, how the heck did he ever fit into that cockpit? You know, that's advertising, indirect advertising and marketing that, you know, the Air Force just can't pay for. And I still wore the uniform when I was with the Cowboys. I was in the Air Force Reserves. I was doing a lot of speaking for them on their behalf, kind of like as an ambassador for the Air Force, as an admissions liaison officer. So even when I was playing for the Cowboys, I was still trying to serve in the U.S. military. But subsequently through that elite athlete program that they instilled, where an individual can go to the service academy, they do 2 years active duty, then they go on, and if they can make a professional team, they transition their career into the Air Force Reserves and do a 3-for-1 commitment. But we had Bryce Fisher played in the NFL for 7 years, Bo Morgan played for a year with the Cowboys, but it ended up spending the majority of that time on injured reserve. We've had a couple other guys go into hockey, soccer. We've got one now on the PGA Tour. We've got a couple guys.
Greg Popovich.
Hockey, yeah. Well, and then, of course, Greg Popovich, too, who fulfilled his commitment, but, you know, NBA Hall of Fame coach, MVP coach for the San Antonio Spurs.
So you and Greg Popovich are the most famous athletes from the Air Force Academy. Do you agree?
Probably the most notable, yes.
Yes, most notable. Yes, okay. All right, so, Chad, another question. Now, let's take you to the years of playing for the Cowboys. The tradition of the Cowboys. Think about this: three Super Bowl rings, that's got to be something that, you know, so many superstar athletes in the NFL never got the opportunity to wear a ring, and you have three of them. How amazing is that?
You know, it was pretty cool because three of the first 4 years of my time in the NFL, we won Super Bowls. So I kind of thought, man, this is how it's supposed to go all the time, that we're just supposed to win
right.
every game, you know, and then
yeah.
win the division, win the conference, and then, you know, win the Super Bowl. But my last few years of my career, it kind of changed where we were struggling to finish, you know, break even at 500. But, you know, there's so many guys because there's only – what would it be, 53 guys get a ring every year. And mm-hmm. when you add that up, this is the 50th Super Bowl this year. There's, you know, there's not too many guys that have played in the league that have one of those. So, I mean, you know, I have three, but I honestly have to say my former teammate, Charles Haley, who was just inducted into the NFL Hall of Fame just this year, has five. And he's,
wow.
you know, to see five rings on somebody's finger is pretty impressive. On somebody's hand, I should say, is pretty impressive.
Yes, and the Steelers, the days of four Super Bowls, but Charles Haley played for our listeners out there that might, you know, go back and date back, 49ers and the Cowboys. So you're right, five Super Bowl rings, an amazing thing. And, Rico, jump in any of the sports stuff because, you know, I'm the sports guy for sure. But let's go to the one that I cry over all the time. You guys were – heavily favorite against the Steelers in the last Super Bowl that you won. And your coach was Barry Switzer, am I correct? So you went from Jimmy Johnson to Barry Switzer. You're heavily favored to win another blowout Super Bowl with the NFC versus the AFC. How did it become such a competitive Super Bowl? What would you say that people underestimated the Steelers, or was it just an unbelievable matchup, how the Steelers matched up with you?
I think the reason why we were heavily favored, because if you recall, we played them the first game of that regular season, and we trounced them at Pittsburgh. We had like 9 sacks in that game collectively as a team, and I think that's what got in the back of Neil Donald's mind. Is, you know, he kept hearing footsteps when his back was turned, and, you know, it would be Charles or myself or Leon Lett or any of the other guys that would – Jim Jeffcoat or Tony Tolbert would – Russell Maryland would be all over him. But I think what it was, we had a fairly, you know, a nice lead at halftime, but they made it competitive. They were able defensively to, you know, thwart our offense where our guys just couldn't, which had been our, kind of like the Cowboys this last year, stop our running game where they were getting three and out, where we couldn't establish that running game to burn some time off the clock. So we ended up, making it a lot tighter than what it possibly could have been, but then again, you get in the Super Bowl, it's like those service academy games where Air Force would play Army or Navy and vice versa, that it doesn't matter what any team's score is or any team's record is, man, it's going to be a heck of a game. And that's the same in the Super Bowl, that it doesn't matter because the AFC and the NFC, you know, they don't play each other on a regular basis typically, the teams that it can be pretty even. Look at the last few years. I mean, it's gone down to the wire how many times out of the last 5 years. So that's just the nature of the beast.
So now, Rico, I know you have a question regarding Chad, life after football. He has a book out now, Rico, so I know you have some questions regarding that.
Well, yeah, I sure do. Thanks, Neil, for, you know, you were talking, this is actually your second book, isn't that right, Chad?
Actually, it's my third. Yeah, this one's my third. I did one, It Takes Commitment, back when I was playing for the Cowboys, and I did one 5 years ago called Rules of Engagement, and my newest one is Forces of Character.
And I noticed you, you know, obviously you have that tremendous theme that runs through your life, you know, since, especially like you talked about in the very beginning, you know, your character, you're going to follow through with your word. In the beginning of the interview, talking about your commitment, you know, to the Air Force, for having gone to the academy, and so can you tell us a little bit about your latest book then, as well?
Right, you bet. I wrote, the reason why I titled it "Forces of Character" is one thing I wanted to try and make a difference in our culture, in our community, and highlight the aspects of what it means to be a force of character. And what I did is I sat down and I had conversations with 10 people, some people you've heard of, some are celebrities, some of you folks you probably have never heard of, from all different walks of life, male, female, black, white, all different types of a broad demographic, and I talked with them about their personal character journey. Because I got tired of, you know, opening up a newspaper or listening to the radio, sports talk, yes, or news radio, or, you know, watch anything on TV news, and it's always about somebody has compromised themselves or has had a lapse in their judgment regarding character. And, you know, our identity as a nation has swapped to one where we're mostly very narcissistic, and it's all about me, and it's not ever getting back to that following that golden rule, to do unto others as you'd have them do unto yourself. So I sat down and I interviewed individuals like Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, Jason Garrett, coach for the Cowboys, Greg Popovich, who we spoke about, Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas. I interviewed another Academy graduate who was a space shuttle commander, Tom Hendricks, an Auschwitz survivor, Dr. Edith Eva Eger. I interviewed an international human rights attorney who was persecuted for her religious beliefs in communist Romania. I interviewed the CEO for the National Center on Fathering, Carrie Casey. And then I sat down and had a conversation with Bob Sweeney, who is a nationally known homeless expert on helping people that are homeless transition out of that lifestyle to get back on their feet. So, and this, it's just their personal stories, and it's the book, I wrote it in conversation form, where it's like what you and I we're having right now is just this dialogue back and forth. And they tell stories about their personal journeys. And it's, you know, it's something that for everybody, whether you're a youngster, whether you're a mom, a dad, a businessman, a single mom, single dad, whatever, because there's stories in there that can apply to anybody across the board on why character is important.
That's tremendous, Chad. So go ahead, Rico. Sorry.
No, go ahead, Neil.
No, I was saying that's so tremendous, Chad, because we talk about character, because we need to have character for success in life, not just on as an athlete, not the job, our vocation, but also what we are called to do. You talk about your faith a lot, Chad, and you understand that you are to be Christ in the middle of the world, to do things in a way as a Christian. It's not just what your title is, it's how you transform other people's lives. And the people that you interviewed had such great character that their traits were not just what they were able to do on the court or on the field or in their vocation. It's how they are impact other people, right, Chad? And that's what you learned in the conversations you had.
That's right. Yeah. And I defined an individual as a force of character. They live to be their best self every day. They encourage others to do the same, and they uplift those around them, whether their teammates, their business associates, their family members, their members in their community, their neighborhood, to live to a higher noble purpose or cause. And it's just about following those aspects of what it, you know, functional or moral character, about having certain traits as being courageous, humble, integrity, respect for others, a great work ethic, a positive attitude, resilience, perseverance, all these things that, you know, it's a choice, and it's a choices that we make on a daily basis.
Absolutely. Well, that segues us right to it, Rico, right?
Well, you know, Chad, you know, the book, my particular book and the radio show here is just two choices. And my approach to life has been over working with youth for about 20 years and also, you know, Air Force experience like yourself and flying and writing books has been that life is all about choice, and that the quality of your choices in every moment equals the quality of your life. And so, you know, you can't make a choice in the future. You can't make a choice in the past. You can only make a choice right here, right now, and there are just two. You're going to make a choice that takes you closer to what you want in terms of, I want to continue to be a person of character that has solid character, or you're going to make a choice that perhaps is going to have that lapse like you talked about, that's going to take you away from in that aspect of your life or any aspect of life. And so a question we ask everybody on the show, this is a survey, and there's no standard answer to it, it's just what comes from your heart. What percentage of life do you consider to be choice, and what percentage do you consider to be circumstance in life in terms of achieving what you want to achieve?
You know what? I think life is 100% about the choices that you make. And I say that in the aspect of no matter what happens to you, no matter whether it's, you know, again, things that you have done that have been an account of what past decisions have come back or whether life happens to you, you have a choice as to how you react to that. And one of the example that really stands out to me in my book, Forces of Character, was when I talk about Dr. Ager, who is a Auschwitz survivor. She was on the cattle car with her mother and her sister going from Hungary to Auschwitz. And her mom went to her sisters, you know, and she held their face in her hands and they said, you know, Edie, we don't know what's going to happen to us. We don't know where we're going. But there's one thing, always remember, that they can never take away from you. It's what you think. Here, and you know, she pointed to her mind, to her head, that we have a choice. Now, if you have that choice in those extreme circumstances where you don't know whether you're going to survive or not and how you react, and this was a lady who had to dance in front of Dr. the Angel of Death, Josef Mengele, knowing that he sent her mother to the gas chamber to die. And she still had a choice as to how she reacted and what she did.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, as she talked about fleeing or fighting or just flowing through life. You know, her chapter itself is worth the price of admission or the price of the purchase of the book, because it is just a phenomenal read, because when somebody survives that extreme set of circumstances and horrific, barbaric circumstances in life and can come out and be a positive, be a force of character – hey, what's my excuse?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, and what's powerful, Chad, is what you talked about, the character. And I think when you said 100% choice, it's because once we have faith that we're not in charge, we're just an instrument, it's our choices we make. It's not the circumstance around us. We have to make the right the authentic choice, the choice that we feel God is calling us to do through us as an instrument. And we're able to do that. And that changes everything, because we, after we make it, we don't, you know, mull over it. We say, okay, I knew that that's where God was calling me. And that seems like that's your entire life for sure, Chad, especially now, you know, giving back in a lot of ways to bring and mentor people in so many ways and all the different things. So, Chad, what are you're currently promoting your book. Tell us a bunch of other things that we can find information on what you're currently doing. And then I also want to plug your Facebook page, because I friended you on Facebook, but I also had to take a look at your fan page, because you have some awesome pictures of your career with Air Force stewards doing a good job. A lot of these other guys, you can't find a picture at all. I found a bunch that I want to use to put it on the slideshow from our interview today. But tell us specifically what you're doing now, Chad.
Well, you could learn more about the book project at forcesofcharacter.com. Get that one out. But what I do, the day job, I have a commercial real estate company. I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I partner with a great group of guys. You know, I do a lot of public speaking. I travel a lot in doing that. And then I help other businesses from a consulting standpoint increase their lines of revenue by increasing their relationships. So I do a variety of different things. I serve on several boards in the local Dallas area. I have my own men's ministry called Wingman. And, you know, I've got two kids and a lovely wife. We've been married 25 years, and I'm enjoying life. I'm enjoying the opportunity to use my brain over my brawn.
Well, you have to be intelligent to go to the Air Force Academy. I have two very intelligent people I'm talking to today, and Chad and Rico, and also my father, who was in the Service Academy. So I definitely plug out to the Service Academy for sure. Now, Chad, you talked about your websites, your Facebook page. They can find you and like your Facebook page. But do you have a Twitter as well? I think you have a Twitter as well. Where can we follow you on Twitter?
Sure, just at Chad Hennings. So you can go to I have several different entities. ForcesofCharacter.com, Twitter at Chad Hennings, or I have a website too if anybody's interested in wanting me to speak to the organization, just chadhennings.com.
Well, I could tell you'd be an amazing person to speak to people, because you truly are authentic. You have great character, and I appreciate you calling. Enrico, do you want to say anything else to Chad before we say sayonara?
No, I'm new. Chad, it's just an honor and a privilege. Thank you for representing humanity so well all the way around.
All right, gentlemen, well, thanks for both of you guys to call. I really appreciate it. Enjoyed our conversation, and take care, both of you.
Take care, guys.
Thank you. Okay. All right.
Thanks,
that was the Total Celebrity Show, Authors Corner. Take care, guys. and we'll be live tomorrow. Good day, everyone.